expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guest do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View.
You are about to enter a world that's not new. A world that will inspire you with pondering to do. A world known only as the Paranormal View.
Time now for the Paranormal View.
The Paranormal View from the Para-X Radio Network. The Paranormal View.
And welcome everybody right here to the Paranormal View on the para-x.com radio. Want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight. And if you're over kind of in the eastern part of the nation, it's kind of cold. So we want to thank you for actually just bundling up and sitting at home and listening to us tonight. We got a great show tonight. Tonight we have Cat Cloco with us.
Ah, je suis Charlie. It helps if you unmute.
Aha! And we got Barbara Duncan with us.
And je suis Charlie aussi.
Oh, and we got, I think, Jeffrey Gould.
Yes, yes, you do. Hello, hello.
All right, we're doing good tonight. And we do have a great guest lined up for tonight. And she's been on many, many times, and we'll get right to her in just a second. As I was saying, that we've got a lot of people here tonight. If you are not in the chat room and you're listening from somewhere else around the world, we appreciate each and every one of you. And if you'd like to join us in the chat room, come over to para-x.com, click on the live chat button, and you'll be in with all these wonderful people. You'll be able to interact with them. You'll be able to interact with us. And you'll be able to ask questions of our guest. So tonight, Jeffrey?
Hello.
I guess you've got the stuff to introduce our guest.
Yes. Well, tonight our guest is returning guest Elaine Kuzmeskis. She's the director of New England School of Metaphysics. She is a nationally recognized medium, once having held a seance for the audience following a performance of Noel Coward's comedy Blight Spirit at the Long Wharf Theater in New Haven, Connecticut. In addition to mediumship, she's the author of six books, Dream Zone, Dreams, Astral Travel and Spirit Communications, Soul Cycles, Astrology 101, Seance 101, Physical Mediumship, Table Tipping, Psychic Photography, Trumpet Seance is another important phenomenon, Connecticut Ghosts, Spirits in the State of Steady Habits, The Making of a Medium and the Art of Mediumship, Psychic Investigation, Clairvoyance, and Channeling. Her background, apart from making extremely long book titles, includes, but is not limited to, over 25 years of teaching psychology and parapsychology at colleges in New England, and 12 years as director of the New England School of Metaphysics. She's a previous guest on the Paranormal View last year, this or almost a year ago this week. Elaine provided various predictions, many of which we'll be talking about tonight.
All right.
Welcome,
Elaine. Glad to have you here tonight.
Yeah, it's a good night to be inside and talking to the Paranormal View. It's about 10 degrees outside my door in Connecticut.
That's probably pretty close to what it is here.
So. But it's beautiful. We've got a really beautiful coating of snow. It looks like it's frosted.
Ours ain't new, but we still have some left around, that's for sure. Matter of fact, the rivers that's around here has got a pretty good start of ice on them. Probably not completely froze over and not thick enough to walk on either, but if you go look at the rivers around here, they're fairly well covered, so that's pretty good. I remember back when I was young, they used to freeze the ponds and everything would freeze hard enough you'd go ice skating on them. I haven't seen that way around here for quite a few years.
Yeah. There's no snow down here.
There's none?
None.
Where you're at?
Right.
Oh, man, we had about, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches the other day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that missed me.
Really?
Yeah. And for our listeners, Henry and I don't really live that far apart. Maybe about a half an hour.
Yep.
He's a half an hour north of me. So, yeah, funny patterns. What were you going to say, Elaine? I'm sorry, I cut you off earlier.
My son lives in New Hampshire. They still do a lot of ice fishing. It really freezes. They go out and enjoy it. Yeah.
I know when I lived in North Dakota, they did a lot of that up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Elaine, you know, when you was on last year and year before and probably year before that, you usually end up giving predictions for the year, and you also tell us about the predictions that you made the previous year. So I think why don't we start with what you had predicted for last year and how it turned out.
First, I'm glad you asked. I have that on my computer screen. My website is www.theartofmediumship.com. And if you go to the astrology blog, every month I have a new prediction for that month. But anyway, I'm on the website. And last year, I had several hits and a couple of misses. I always am very honest. One thing I did feel last year that it would be a lot of problems continuing in the Mideast and a big push to send more troops over to the Mideast. However, I said if wiser heads prevailed, we might hold off for a year or two. I think that's come true to a great degree. I also felt that there would be more hope on the horizon for students. And I think I'm off just a little bit, but I do feel President Obama's new program, I hope it goes through Congress, to make two-year colleges, community colleges, free if you're willing to do some public service, is the hope that our young people need. So I think that is coming to pass eventually. I also talked about positive psychology. I think more and more psychologists are going toward mindfulness. There's a whole school of positive psychology. Did you know that, Henry and Kat, out in Pennsylvania?
Really?
Oh.
University of Pennsylvania. They studied learned optimism. If we can learn to be depressed, we can learn to be happy. So they have a school for positive psychology. I think that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I also mindfulness that a lot of psychologists are using to work with to make people calmer, less anxious, is going to be a big push in this year to continue. I also feel that we're getting more and more books about life after death, and that's continuing. 2 years ago, we had Eben Alexander's Proof of Heaven, how he was in a coma state and remained conscious, even though his mind seemed to be flatlined. And I think that's important. More people are interested in the other side. I also feel that there's quite a lot going on in terms of civil unrest. I talked about that last year. I thought a lot of people are unhappy, not just because I thought the race riots would be more to, I felt there would be race riots, which there were, and I felt the major cities would experience that division between the have and have not. I thought there'd be a little more problems in toward Miami and the Baja, but that hasn't happened. That might happen in the year coming up. And also, that was the one I did miss. I felt there might be a disaster, either earthquake or flooding in Southern California, in the peninsula. And I think that's
we can skip that.
Do what, Jeff?
We don't need that one of those. I can go anywhere but in California.
I did in the fall, if you looked at my astrology blog, I saw lower gas prices, and that happened. I said slightly lower, but it turned out to be a great deal lower. So that's a very good thing.
Yes, very good. And I want to remind everybody that if you do have questions for Elaine, you can private chat them to either Ceiling Cat, Cat Paraview, or Jeffrey Gould, or myself, and we will get those questions right over to Elaine.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a lot of stuff. She's got a lot of books. We might even get a chance to talk a little bit about a couple of them. But we're also going to, Elaine's going to do some readings for people later on. So you can get ready that if you think that you would might want a reading, here's what you have to do. You have to private chat either myself, Ceiling Cat, Pair of You, or Jeffrey Gould, and tell us what your name is and your phone number, so I can call you into the show. Do you have to actually talk to him, Elaine?
I like to say hello because I get a lot from voice vibration. Everyone's voice has a certain energy I pick up on.
Okay.
So if they could say hello and give me their, they don't have to give last name, but give me your first name. This would be very helpful.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. And don't post your phone numbers in the main chat. No. And please don't post them on Twitter.
Right.
So that we don't want everyone knowing what your private phone number is for those who are interested. Also, just a, for the record, behind me sitting right now is Paranormal Pup Wheatley, and he's chewing on a rawhide bone. I am not eating Hershey Kisses on live radio, as some people crunch, in the chat room have asked me.
How crunchy are Hershey's Kisses where you are?
I guess it would depend on how they are filled, or if I'm eating frozen ones, but... Yeah, no, somebody in the chat room thought that I was eating on the air, and that is, in fact, my dog. Oh. One of them.
You're eating your dog? Oh, wait,
I am not eating my dog! No! Oh, no! No.
Okay.
He's behind me.
Elaine, until we get ready to do some of the other things... a couple of things that your books. Why don't you let people know what books you have and where they can get those at? And we'll be talking a little bit. I got a couple of questions on a couple of them.
Sure. Well, I'll start with my latest book, which is Dream Zone, which is about dreams and astral travel and spirit communication. Did you know you can actually astral travel in your dream state, Henry?
In your dream state, you're right. dream state. No.
Many times people...
If you're dreaming sometimes, are you actually maybe doing that when a dream kind of feels real or something? Or?
Oh, yeah.
That could be it. It could be a dream. But there are cases where people have done, like, remote viewing in the dream state and gone to different places. I think that's always fascinating. We're learning more and more about this from more modern studies on remote viewing. And the old-fashioned term, of course, was astral travel. So if you read Dream Zone, I got a couple of very good chapters to help you develop your ability to go places in your dreams, but also the psychic side of dreams. Many times, Edgar Cayce said this, and I do believe it to be true, anything of importance that happens in our lives, we first see in a dream. It's kind of like we preview it. So people always ask me, what's the best way to develop your psychic ability? And I say there are two ways. One is through meditation. And the other is through recording your dreams, because almost everyone is psychic in their dreams. I often call dreams the lazy person's way to the psychic, because you're just natural in the dream state. And many writers have had some very unusual experiences regarding dreams. Larry Dweller, who wrote The Beginner's Guide to Mediumship, had an unusual dream where he saw a very dapper gentleman dressed in a houndstooth suit and white bats appearing regularly in his dreams and telling him things, usually telling him the importance of homework and telling him how to get along with family members. And later, many years later, he spied the dapper gentleman in the family album. It was his grandfather, who died in 1932. Many of us have had extremely important dreams where we communicate with our relatives who have passed over. And I think this is a wonderful thing. If you want to develop your psychic ability, start paying a little more attention to your dreams. And I have a whole section in Dream Zone on how to interpret the dream symbol. And people, of course, always ask me how I became a medium, so I wrote a book to answer that question, and it's called The Making of a Medium. It's put out by Galdi. And I talk about all the things that I learned and how I was trained. You know, mediums have to be trained. You just, even if you have a natural ability, it's like anything. You have to really work at it, practice, to really perfect it. So I talk about how I began as a very young child, seeing spirits around, talking to spirits. And I didn't realize that other people were psychic also until I read about Edgar Cayce. Have you heard about Edgar Cayce?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think everyone has now. But way, you know, it's only recently that so many people have become involved with Edgar Cayce and his work. But I realized that it is a natural, it's an ability that's meant to help people, and it can be a very good way of developing your own creativity and talent. And my favorite chapter I recommend for those of you that have the making of a medium is chapter 6, which is on psychometry. This is how I was trained to develop my psychic sight, was through psychometry. Every week I would go to have a private lesson with my teacher, Reverend Gladys Custon, and she would give me an article, and I would have to go into a light trance state and describe the owner of the article, tell whether they were alive or dead, describe surroundings. And as I did this, I realized that I was receiving information from my spirit guide. I had a Hindu guide that worked with me, and Gladys also had a Hindu guide she called the professor. So we would be in the seance room, Reverend Gladys and I, in trance, working on psychometry. So that's, I explained that in chapter 6, how it works. And I even have a form at the end of the chapter on how to conduct a psychometry session, the protocol for a psychometry session. So if any of the guests read it and they want some information or have read that, please give me a call. I'd be happy to give you more tips during the program. And then the question that I get asked the most, of course, is how can I develop mediumship? So I was fortunate to have a great publisher, Schiffer Publications, out in Philadelphia.
Akron, Pennsylvania.
Yes, they did. Akron, Pennsylvania, near Philadelphia. And I have a great editor who helped me with it, Dinah Rosenberry. And we put the book together, and I think they did a very good job on making it as readable as possible for people. And in The Art of Mediumship, I talk about some very important things. First, the history. Do you realize that mediumship goes all the way back to ancient Egypt and Greece, the Delphi Oracle, into more modern and spiritualism? And so mediumship is nothing new. It's talked about throughout history. And then I talk about how science is now beginning to understand the process of mediumship. We have from Professor William James to today's Arizona Professor Gary Schwartz, they've done a lot of studies on mediumship. And Ann Gaiman, who I know from my work at Lilydale Assembly, I usually do seminars there every year, Ann Gaiman is one of our best mediums, and she was tested by Dr. Gary Schwartz. And I thought it was interesting how they tested her. They had her do a reading in two ways. One, where the person was in the room and she did the reading, but she was not allowed to ask any questions. Mm-hmm. And then she did a reading after that part, then the person was allowed to give a yes or no to her questions. Like she might say, I see you have a grandmother in spirit. She looks about 85 years old, and she had a hearing loss in her right ear. Well, at that point, the person could say yes. And they found when they used just the yes and no questions that most of the mediums, including Ann Gaiman, had about an 85% correct. And that's quite high. It's quite high. And I think that's important to realize that science is beginning to understand that we do continue to exist past a change called death, and sensitive people who are trained in mediumship can absolutely connect with the other side. Unfortunately, just as we're getting really good at understanding mediumship, we also have the copycats, people that pretend to be psychic but really aren't. Mm-hmm. And explain that we have to be careful of that. If someone is a genuine medium, we have to realize they will have the ability to tune in and give names and describe spirits we don't have to give them all the information. Do you ever hear hot and cold readings?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, hot readings is when somebody researches the person before they come for the session, so they're really cheating. Cold readings are what a mentalist do. You know, mentalists could often pretend to be mediums, and often they'll say they're pretending. But mentalists, they get their information just by asking questions, you know. They'll give in, mm-hmm. they'll ask you questions, and just by the tone of your voice, your hand gestures, your face, they'll get a sense of what direction to go in. And that's what you call a cold reading. When somebody
They're reading somebody by the way they're acting, and maybe by also the way that they answer the things that you're saying or the questions.
Mentalists all the time. So they tend to be the most critical of mediums. But that doesn't indicate mediumship. It just means you have to be careful of those practices. And in the art of mediumship, I love to talk about the development circle. Have either of you ever sat in a development circle?
No.
Let me tell you. A lot of churches. In Indiana, too, Camp Chesterfield has a lot of development circles. Well, this is what the old-time mediums used to do. They would get together and form a circle. And they would pray and meditate and wait for spirit to come in. Like the Quakers, they kind of waited for some manifestation. And eventually, people would begin to feel spirit around. Now, there are different forms of mediumship, different ways you can contact the other side. The National Association of Spiritualist Churches talks about mental mediums and physical mediums. In mental mediumship, you contact the spirit through clairvoyance, seeing spirit or clairaudience, hearing spirit or clairsentience, feeling spirit. A couple years ago, when I was at Lilydale, I had an experience of clairgustience. You know what clairgustience is?
No.
It's when you either taste or smell something that is paranormal. So I was sitting in the Maplewood Hotel at Lilydale Assembly, and it's an old-fashioned structure. It's all wood. So they have signs posted everywhere saying, no smoking allowed. I'm telling you, one match, that place will go up. So my friend Linda and I were there, my husband, and all of a sudden I could smell smoke, and it was very strong. So I said to Ron, I said, you know, no one is supposed to smoke here. I'm going to see who's smoking. And I looked in the next room. Nobody was there. I went out to the porch. Nobody was sitting in those rocking chairs on the Maplewood porch. I came back in. I said to Linda, I can't believe people are smoking, but I can't find out who's doing it. And then it just dawned on me. It wasn't anybody alive. It was someone in spirit who was a heavy smoker. So I said to Linda, your father died in February. Was he a heavy smoker? She goes, yes, he died from lung cancer. So that's an example of clairgustience, where you can either taste or smell something paranormal. Of course, clairaudience is very common. Reverend Arthur Ford, have you ever heard of Reverend Arthur Ford?
I have not.
He was a wonderful, wonderful medium. He came from Florida, but he worked at Lilydale Assembly at a home there in Camp Chesterfield. He was a great clairaudient. He'd be on the platform. He'd give first and last names of people. And, of course, he was also known for his trance mediumship, where he'd go into trance and his guide Fletcher would come through. But clairaudience is when you hear spirit. And you may often, like, sometimes I'll hear somebody say Zelda. And then I'll ask the person, do you know anybody named Zelda? And they'll say, oh, that was my great aunt. Or you might hear somebody say Mary or Tom. Well, one time I was doing readings, I was so tired of all the common names, you know, although they were accurate. I said, spirit, can't you just give me a different name? So all of a sudden, I heard the word Buster. Oh, great. I said, Buster's here. And then I could feel the energy go down about my knee, and I said, he must be a dog. And somebody, person in front of me said, yes, I lost my dog Buster last year. So that's, hear the name. And then clairvoyance is my specialty, and that is when you see spirit. Usually you can see spirit in two ways. With your eyes closed, and that would be in your mind's eye subjectively. and you can also see spirit objectively. And when you begin to develop clairvoyance, most people will see, they'll see little lights in the room like the size of a dime. And if you walk for a while, you'll realize this is not anything that of the natural environment, is something supernatural. Sometimes students will say, well, Elaine, how do I know it's not my eyes going bad? And I said, well, wait a second, close your eyes. If you still see the spirit lights with your eyes closed, you know it's supernatural. And clairvoyance is a wonderful gift. It's often called the gift of second sight. It's very much revered in England and Scotland. You have a lot of great psychics who are clairvoyants there. And the thing about clairvoyance is you can paint the picture of what spirit looks like. If you can see them, you can actually explain or draw what the spirit looks like. So those are what we call the mental forms of mediums. We used to laugh when I was a mediumship student in my early 20s. We'd say, oh, everyone thinks we're mental anyway. But my teacher said, no, that's a type of mediumship. Then we also have physical mediumship. And I wrote Seance 101 with a super long title because I wanted to really research physical phenomena. So I went to England, to the Arthur Findlay College. I went to Brazil, where John of God is. I went to Camp Chesterfield in Indiana, which is known for its physical mediums. And, of course, the Liddell Assembly and throughout New England to write this particular book. Because physical mediumship is much rarer than mental mediumship. I think for a couple reasons, it takes a great deal of energy to be a physical medium. And as my teacher Gladys used to say, you have to have a certain chemistry in your body. Not everyone can do it. So the types of physical mediumship, which is on page 46 of The Art of Mediumship, if you have the book there, are things such as direct voice, where everyone in the room can hear spirit speaking. Have any of you experienced that?
I have.
Yes.
It's really rare, but I have.
I've heard people call names and stuff.
Oh, it's great. Kat, could everybody in the room hear the spirit speak?
Yeah, they didn't say anyone's name. I've never heard a calling ghost like that, but it was a yes.
Great,
and I've heard
it
twice in the, oh goodness, I don't remember how many years I've been in the paranormal. Over a decade.
And sometimes mediums will use a trumpet to bring the voice of spirit through. I've been to about 15 trumpet seances, which are really interesting. In a trumpet seance, the ones I've gone to have been at Camp Chesterfield, Indiana, with Reverend Louise Irvine, and also several with Reverend Hoyt Robinette. They're totally amazing. They will take an aluminum cone and put it on a table, and the medium will go into deep trance. Is when the medium's brainwaves go right down to delta. They are unconscious. And when they're in that unconscious state, their guide comes through and manipulates the trumpet. And you actually see the trumpet float around the room. The room has to be pitch dark, so they often put like a luminous band on the bottom of the trumpet so you can see it as it moves around. They talk about this in Seance 101. And I've heard some amazing spirits come through it. One of the seances with Reverend Hoyt Robinette, an old-time medium came through who was a healer, Reverend Harry Edwards, and he actually talked to me, and everyone in the room could hear the voice of Harry Edwards coming through the trumpet. I was very privileged at another seance to hear the voice of Daniel Douglas Hume, who was an old-time spiritualist medium. He was the most famous medium of the Victorian times. He did mediumship for Elizabeth Barrett Browning, Russian royalty, British royalty. He came through, and everyone in the room could hear his voice. So this, hearing the voice of spirit, or direct voice, or trumpet through a trumpet, or directly, is a form of physical mediumship. Psychic photography is a newer form of physical mediumship, and that has really become the rage. If you just Google psychic photography, you'll see many, many pictures of orbs, spirit faces, outlines. It's amazing. And have any of you done psychic photography?
No.
No, I haven't.
Right. Well, you know, you never know. Snap a picture and you'll see an orb in the picture without even trying sometimes. I teach psychic photography at New England School of Metaphysics, and we really try to help the students, first of all, to realize that what constitutes psychic photography. You have to be very careful. You are actually photographing spirit, not specks of dust or raindrops. And then we try to help them contact their spirit guide, because you need to be in touch with a spirit guide to help you with this. And that does take a while. And through practice, most of our students at least get to take orbs, and some people get faces, and other people are fortunate enough to get the whole figure. One of my friends snapped a photograph at a fire ceremony, Mary, and she actually got the figure of an American Indian in the photograph. So, you know, it can be done. And then, of course, we have slate writing. Now, slate writing is not as popular as it used to be. You know what slate writing is?
No.
No, no.
Okay, well, if you go to Camp Chesterfield, Indiana, or Lilydale Assembly, you'll see these slates that have mm-hmm. a spirit on them. Now, I really didn't know what slate writing was until my teacher, Gladys Custon, told me about an unusual experience she had in the 1950s at Chesterfield. She and her friend, Mrs. Morris, and her husband, Reverend Kenneth Custon, and their dear friend, Marory Morse, all went out to Camp Chesterfield. And the way Gladys described it is, they had a room with a table in the center. The medium allowed 12 people in. Everybody was given a slate, and inside the slate was a piece of chalk, and then it was tied with a piece of leather rope and put in the center of the table. And the medium said the Lord's Prayer, they sang songs, and everybody held hands as they turned the lights out and in pitch darkness. Gladys said she could hear scratching as if something was going on with the slate. But nobody was allowed to touch the slate or open it until the seance was over. And when she opened it, everybody got a message from someone in spirit. And Mrs. Morse's husband, Dr. Morse, had died that year. And he wrote a very personal message in his own distinctive handwriting. Slate writing is not done as much today, but we've done some slate writing in class. We haven't got writing, but we've got little pictures that come through. For example, one of our slate writing sessions, I got a little picture of American Indian with his hands up to a cloud. And I thought that was very evidential because my spirit guide's name is White Cloud. My physical guide is White Cloud. And really, we didn't do anything except put the slates out during a seance. And I said to spirit, if you can do something or show us. And I did this for about, I guess, 2 years on and off in different projects. And finally, one day after class, one of the students said, aren't you going to open the slate? And I said, okay. And there was this wonderful picture of the Indian with his hands up to the white clouds. So it can come spontaneously. But anyway, my book, Seance 101, talks about all the different great physical mediums and all the wonderful things that can be done. Now today, of course, with all our electronic devices, we can capture spirit in ways that the Victorian mediums never could. And another craze today is electronic voice phenomena. Are you aware of that?
Oh, yes.
I think that's better known than slate writing. It's often called EVPs.
Right.
This is where spirit voices are produced on either digital or tape recorders. And I thought that was fascinating. I went to study with Lisa and Tom Butler when I was writing Seance 101. And I went up to Omega for a 4-day retreat. Learn about how to do EVPs. Now, I'm a medium, so before each class, I would talk to my spirits and see what they wanted. And I think it was the second class, I was meditating, and who came through but Reverend Carl Hewitt. Reverend Carl Hewitt was a very well-known Connecticut medium, very beloved. His group still has their Church in Chesterfield, Connecticut. And he said, Elaine, you're close to a breakthrough. And I was just so thrilled to hear from Carl. He had died in February. It was now October. That it really kind of boosted my spirits. So I went to class, and we were all told the procedure, the protocol, is to turn your tape recorder on and have some form of white noise. It could be a tape recorder. It could be a hair dryer going, or it could be water running. You know, so I think Lisa Butler was there, and she had something that made white noise. And I turned the tape recorder on, and I just said, is anybody there? Now, you don't hear the voices. You hear them later when you play them back. I waited about 30 seconds. And then I said, do you have a message for us, spirit? You always speak directly to the spirit. I did. I waited another 30 seconds. And then I said, well, we're going to turn the tape recorder off. And I counted to 15 in my head because Tom and Lisa said, wait 15 seconds before you shut it off. Somebody still just come in at the last minute. So anyway, that was my first EVP session. I was so excited because what they did is there were only 12 in the class, and each of us had a chance to have our little, I guess, two-minute tape amplified. And the first voice that we got, and everybody could hear it, was Carl, and it was in a certain accent. So I didn't say a word. I said, what do you think it is, to the group? And they said, well, obviously it was Carl. I said, did you hear an accent? They said, yes, he sounds like he comes from the South. And that was to Reverend Carl Hewitt, grew up in North Carolina. He always had a very, very distinct Southern accent. So he came through for me, and I was very happy about that. I thought it was great. I just loved it. And I've had other EVP sessions where we get, like, very faint voices. Sometimes you get names. One EVP session I got was Protect Anthony, and my husband's father, Anthony Kosmeskis, had died that year. So I thought that was evidential, too. And EVPs take a lot of practice. You have to really, really do a lot of tapings before you start getting what they call Class A recordings. Everybody in the room can identify very easily what the spirit is saying. And Carl coming through in Anthony's essays. So that's fun. And there's just so many things out there that we are learning about physical phenomena and having the ability to connect better with spirit than ever before. One of my favorite things that I talk about in Seance 101 is spirit artists. Have you ever had a spirit artist do a picture of your guide or relative?
No. My wife has.
Oh, nice. Well, was it a relative that came through or a spirit guide?
It must have been a spirit guide because it was like they drew an angel.
Oh, nice. I wrote an article last year for Peyton Magazine called Physical Phenomena at Camp Chesterfield, and there's a picture of my spirit guide who's a Tibetan monk that was drawn by Reverend Phyllis Kennedy, who is no longer doing spirit drawing, but she met me at Camp Chesterfield, and I asked her if she would draw a picture of my guide, and she meditated, and she drew this beautiful picture of a Tibetan guide. And since I'm clairvoyant, I've often seen a younger Tibetan guide that comes in and helps me when I do readings. So I was thrilled to have that. I've also had spirit artists do pictures of my relatives. We were doing a class on spirit art at the New England School of Metaphysics, and I met Reverend Rita Berkowitz for the first time. She came to do the class, and she looked at me, and she says, Elaine, there's a gentleman standing next to you. He's about 5'4", he has gray hair, he's got a gray suit, a white shirt, and a burgundy tie. I said, oh, that has to be my grandfather, Harry Birkin. And she says, yes, he nodded, it is. So she was kind enough at the end of the class to draw a charcoal sketch of the person that she saw. And sure enough, it's a dead ringer from my grandfather. I thought it was pretty good. We had never met before, so you can't say that she had read anything or saw any pictures of my grandfather. But she did a beautiful picture. And many spirit artists have that ability to see spirit and to draw spirit as well. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful gift to have, definitely. I talked a little bit about this in my book by Galdi Press, The Making of a Medium, where we talk about great Reverend Rita coming in and doing that wonderful picture. There's so many things that we can learn if we'll take the time to go inward. I think one of the things in our society now is we're just so outward all the time, so busy, 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 that we don't take that time to maybe connect with our spirit guides, our loved ones, our inner thoughts. I think that's very important. So give me a little bit about some of the books I've written.
Right. I think what we're going to go ahead and do right now is go ahead and take a break. I already have at least one lined up who is wanting a reading, and that shortly after we come back. And then, like I say, I want to, some of the questions you just asked that I had that we was going to talk about, which was the trumpet seance and the psychic photography. So you answered those, and I got some others. We'll also get to them in a little bit. But we're going to go ahead and take our first break. Kat will be able to take us out. It's going to be about 7 minutes, something like that. And Jeffrey will, or Cece will bring us back. So with that, Kat, why don't you take us out?
Yep. Well, I have a question for Elaine, but I'll ask it after the break. But everyone, you are listening to The Paranormal View with your hosts, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, Barbara Duncan, and myself, Kat Kloko. Tonight's guest is returning guest Elaine Kosmiskas, a spiritualist medium and author of The Art of Mediumship, Soul Circles, Connecticut Ghosts, Seance 101, as we've been talking about, plus much, much more. Find her at artofmediumship.com, and there's more to come after the break.
So, you had a lucid dream about living in Atlantis, teaching telepathy, and you're wondering what it means. We can actually help. We are the School of Metaphysics, a 40-year-old international resource for people who have questions, big, juicy, deep questions about life and death and everything in between. 16 branches in the U.S., self-guided study online, weekend courses, webinars, and books. Send us a telepathic fax or visit our website, www.som.org. This could be the start of something really interesting.
Hi, I'm Daryl Wisman from Posttown Elementary School in Middletown, Ohio, and you're listening to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
Ghost Hunters Case Log 451. The time? Thursday, 8 p.m. Okay, we're going to start an EVP session. Is there anyone out there? Can you repeat that? I really need you to try to project louder and slower so we can all hear.
The Black Cat Lounge.
That's right, gang. Listen in, the Black Cat Lounge, every Thursday night, 8 o'clock, on Para-X.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
You know, there's nothing like a great memory of a great time. And if you grew up during the 1950s, 60s, 70s, or 80s, boy, have we got the memories for you. There was no time more innocent than the 1950s or 60s, nor was there a time more politically explosive. Hi, this is Steve Shockley, a.k.a. The Shock. Join me live every Friday and Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern for a Baby Boomer Rock with a Shock sock hop on Rock with a Shock. Radio.com. Nine words women use. One.
Fine.
This is the word women use to end an argument when they are right and you need to shut up. Two.
5 minutes.
If she is getting dressed, this means a half hour. 5 minutes is only 5 minutes if you have just been given five more minutes to watch the game before helping around the house. Three.
Nothing.
This is the calm before the storm. This means something and you should be on high alert. Arguments that begin with
nothing
usually end in
fine.
Four.
Go ahead.
Warning. Warning, Will Robinson. This is a dare, not permission. Don't do it. Five. This is actually a word, but it is a nonverbal statement often misunderstood by men. A loud sigh means that she thinks you are an idiot and wonders why she is wasting her time standing here arguing with you about nothing. Refer back to number three for the meaning of nothing. Six.
That's okay.
This is one of the most dangerous statements a woman can make to a man.
That's okay.
Means that she wants to think long and hard before deciding how and when you will pay for your mistake. Seven.
Thanks.
A woman is thanking you. Do not question or faint. Just say, you're welcome. Be careful. This is true unless she says,
thanks a lot.
That is pure sarcasm and she is not thanking you at all. Do not say you're welcome if she says,
thanks a lot.
Or that will bring on,
whatever.
Eight.
Whatever.
This is the woman's way of saying,
fuck you.
Nine.
Don't worry about it. I got it.
Another dangerous statement, meaning this is something that a woman has told a man to do several times, but is now doing it herself. This will later result in a man asking, what's wrong? For the woman's response, refer to number three. And that is just nine words women like to use.
Whether you need help putting together your event, looking for a celebrity, or just want to pump up the excitement, look no further than Ideal Event Management. Ideal Event Management is a top-rated paranormal events organizer. They also represent some of the biggest names and personalities in the paranormal community. Contact Mark at 413-478-3642 or check out their website at idealeventmanagement.com. You've enjoyed Para-X on your computer at work and at home. But today, there's a new way to listen to your favorite shows. Para-X has gone mobile. That's right. Para-X is now available on the Nokia Internet Radio Network. Now, you can take Para-X with you wherever you go. Never miss your favorite shows again. Para-X on your cell phone. Tune in today. Nokia Internet Radio is available on all Nokia portable devices with access to the Internet. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X. Now on Nokia.
Para-X Radio presents Real Persons of Genius.
Real Persons of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Armed with nothing more than a laptop and a microphone, you hit the air to scare the bejesus out of your audience.
What the hell was that noise?
Like a dog peeing on a fire hydrant, you always whet our appetite for more.
I just can't get enough.
Whether it's witches, ghosts, fairies, or Bigfoot, we admire your ability to set aside reality and believe anything anyone tells you.
Seek professional help.
So the next time you're kneeling in front of your 8x10 glossy of Dave and Tom lighting a candle, remember, if it wasn't for you, I might be able to sleep without the lights on.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X Soho.
Para-X Radio Network, powered by CBS.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View here on Para-X Radio. We want to thank you all for showing up tonight, pre-Golden Globe Eve. And all listeners in the chat room is filling up nicely, and our listeners from all around the world. And tonight they're coming in from Australia, the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, France, Haiti, and Unknown is back.
Oh.
Woohoo! Welcome back, Unknown.
Yeah, because we have a very, very great guest tonight, author, medium, astrologer, Elaine Kosmeskis. Welcome back, Elaine.
Hi, glad to be on tonight. Thanks for having me.
And I believe Kat has a question.
Yeah, it pertained more to about the dreams. And I don't know, maybe you can explain this to me, why I am dreaming and speaking in perfect Korean when I can't speak Korean.
Well, Kat, can you just give me your month and day of birth?
Okay, it's March 22nd.
Okay, well, what I'm getting with this psychically is that you have a Korean guide.
Okay.
I feel this is very important for you to know. I felt once I just jumped on the 22nd, which of course is a double number. It's double in numerology. We never break it down. We keep it as 22, which gives you some psychic abilities. And I think you wouldn't be on a show like this if you didn't believe in the psychic to a certain degree.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be coming up more for you. I feel that you have a great interest also with what I call Eastern thought, and also the Native Americans around you. And I think these dreams are going to be becoming more and more powerful because they're an excellent way, the dream zone, as I call it in my book, Dream Zone, to connect with our guides. So I hope that you maybe could write it down phonetically and have somebody translate it for you. See if you get, I think you would get some, I know right now it's in English. I do think you're going to get some words in Korean.
Okay.
You know, it's very interesting, Kat. I've had dreams very similar to that, where I've seen Buddhist monks and they're writing in Japanese, but in transliterated English, transliterated Japanese, and trying to get that translated, it came out to change comes from the going to the mountain retreat. It really fascinating.
That is interesting. So for background for our listeners, I am actually fluent in Japanese and have studied Japanese for over 15 years. And it's quite common for anyone who speaks a second language or third language quite frequently to dream in those languages. But I don't know Korean. All I know is hello and thank you. And that is it. And I found it in it. I will have a complete entire dreams, full color, like they're a movie dreams, but they'll be in Korean. And I understand everybody and everyone understands me, and it's confusing. But I will say it's better than the zombie monster epidemic that I was getting earlier this week, but that was due to stress.
I was right. You do have an interest in Japanese. I didn't know that about you.
Yeah. I used to live in Japan.
Oh. That's me, so I'm just getting ready to call our person that wanted
in. So. And another question from the chat room, which was from Very Cranky Witch. Andy asks, how do you get in touch with your spirit guides?
That's a wonderful question. I got with some spirit guide when I was in my crib at about 3 years old. And I remember waking up and seeing a Hindu guide that only I could see. He had a cotton loincloth and a cotton turban, and he just would talk to me. So to me, I believed it was through my clairvoyance. But you can also have a chapter in Dream Zone on how you can get in touch with your spirit guide through dreams, because this is a very easy way. If you will take time to write down your dreams on a regular basis, you'll see that many times you are talking to people, such as the spirit guides or loved ones that are trying to help you. Another one that is very recent way to get in touch with spirit guides is through meditation. And you don't have to go to the mountaintop. You don't have to be in a cave. All you need is three things to meditate. You need to have a quiet space. So turn the telephones off. You need to have a receptive mind, you know, expecting something to come through. And the third thing is you need some type of device to stimulate meditation. Some people do it through breathing. Some people like to listen to wonderful tapes. I love the Eternal Om is one of my favorite tapes. Kitaro Silk Road is another tape that I like very much. And Inward Harmony by Marcy. I've used all those in my meditation classes with good results. You can also meditate on a Tibetan mandala or the Singing Bowls meditation. There's so many things. And just those three things, having the quiet space, a positive attitude, and some type of focus. If you do it on a regular basis, start with 5 minutes and try to build up to 20, it won't be long before you will either see, sense, feel, or hear a spiritual presence. And that's how many people have gotten in touch with their spirit guides. And if you look at the mediumship literature, there are so many people such as Edgar Casey, who always talked about his spirit guides. Which now, early on, when Casey was 4 years old, his grandfather died. And as a little boy, he would talk to the spirit of his grandfather, and that was his first teacher or guide. As he became a professional channeler, Casey's guide was the Source, which I believe was a group of guides. Does anybody know what the name of Sylvia Brown's guide was?
No.
Any Sylvia Brown fans out there?
Nope. I don't know what it was.
She actually, when she was very young, she was surprised when she was 8 years old. She heard the voice saying she came to talk to her, not to be worried about her gift because it was of God. And then the guide gave her a very long name. And Sylvia says, I can't pronounce that. So the guide said, what's your favorite name? She said, Francine. So she called her guide Francine. And that became one of her guides. Elwood Babbitt, who's one of my favorite channelers, but Dr. Fisher. And Elwood was kind of a farmer playing football.
Hello?
Hello, is this Dory?
Yeah. Yes, it's Dory.
All right, hold on just a second.
Thank you.
Uh-oh. Did I lose everybody else?
No.
Hold on.
You know, but the audio is kind of weird, and everybody's stepping on each other.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, everybody does have guides, whether it's grandma or it's grandfather or it's an aunt, or some people feel that Jesus is their guide or Buddha. In meditation, mm-hmm. you can actually connect as well as in dreams, and doing spiritual readings can help you connect with your guides. I hope I've answered your question.
Yeah. Sorry about the interruption, by the way, Elaine.
Yeah.
With the phone call.
It just, I didn't think it was going to make that much noise. But anyway.
Yeah.
We have Dory on with us, and Dory, you wanted reading, so.
I can barely hear.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay.
Okay, what's your first name? Did you just give me your first name?
Dory.
Dory. And just the month and day of your birth.
October 12th.
Good. Well, first thing I feel about you, Dory, is I feel you're the type of person that you're a giver, not a taker. I feel that you have a quality where you're interested in other people. And I see you like to read a lot. And there's a lady in back of you who's short, average built, and she's got a house coat, so that she goes back a little ways. And I felt she was the type of person that she would wear a house coat in the morning and that she'd get all dressed up in the afternoon to go out. You know who that would be?
No.
Okay. I'm going to go a little further. I'm going to go on your mother's side of the family. Do you know your mother's grandmother or your mother's mother?
Yes.
Okay. Did he either of them sound like the person I was describing?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going toward the mother's side of the family. I can't change the message. I can just give it to you. Did you have a question for me, Dory?
I'm going through a crisis right now, and I'm just wondering. I've been asking for guidance.
All right. Well, I do.
I'm just wondering which path I should go through.
Sure. First of all, I wanted to say you're not alone. I felt this older relative helping you. I also felt a gentleman come in a three-piece suit, going back to, I guess, a number of years. He seems like a person that has silver hair. He seems like he might have been a professional man when he was alive. And he's putting his hand right on your forehead. And he's kind of wiping it as if to say the time isn't quite right to make a decision. Would that make sense?
I don't know who would be touching me.
Did you feel like to make a decision?
No.
Okay, because I
don't know who could be touching me.
Excuse me, dear?
Because I don't know who could be touching me.
Well, I'm just feeling the energy around you, positive energy around you, trying to help you. But I do feel that it's like this pressure building up, like you feel you have to make a decision. I honestly feel if you get a little more time, I would say more toward like the spring months, you'll have more information, better be able to make a better decision.
That makes sense.
Excuse me? Yeah. And so it seems like something's going to pop in a positive way, but it isn't quite here yet. So I think you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself. And, you know, I find when I have to make important decisions, if I can find distractions, I make the best decision. I like to go for a swim or out closets. I don't know, walking. That works for me. So try to keep balance in other areas of your life. And when you get the information that you need, I think mid-March things will fall into place for you. Picking up the name around you.
Can you tell me if my mother visits with me?
Let me see. I gotta see if she's around. And your mother says she tries to visit with you, and she tries to talk to you on the right side of your body. And you may find a buzzing in your ear. Have you had that experience, Dory?
Yes.
Okay, that is your mother, and she's very happy that you are aware of that experience as she comes in. Now, I did feel you like to read a lot. Have you been doing a lot of reading lately?
Yes.
And I feel that sometimes when you're reading, it's like you'll feel a presence behind you?
Yes.
And that is the gentleman I was talking about in the three-piece suit. He's might be a teacher or professor, but somebody that's very interested in being of help to you. So every now and then you get that down your spine, like something important's going on, and that's because you're being helped. That's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And right from the beginning, I thought you were a giver, but you know, sometimes the most important thing is to take care of ourselves first. And I think this is what you do. Get yourself balanced. And I'll tell you something, it's kind of funny. Have you been losing things lately, misplacing them?
Yes.
Shoes, jewelry. Whenever I am off balance, never fails, I misplace shoes. And as soon as I make a decision or my life is more balanced, I find them immediately. And I think you're going to find when you make a decision, all those two or three things that have been missing, you're going to say, oh my God, they were right there after all. So that's another sign you're on the right path.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
That's cool to you. And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Lakeport, New York.
Nice. How's the weather there?
Cold. Cold.
I wish you here.
Well,
thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Very welcome, and thank you for wanting to get a reading from Elaine. We appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well,
thank you. Take care.
Enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you. Bye bye.
All right. Bye bye.
Do we have more callers, or would you like me to do my predictions for 2015 now?
Why don't you go ahead and do your predictions for 2015?
I'll
just summarize them. But the first thing I felt that hope is on the horizon. And I'll tell you why. I feel that the lower gas prices and oil prices are going to put more money in people's pockets. I don't see them rising significantly until late summer. I also feel, which is very important, that people are becoming more realistic. And I think that employment is going to continue to be good. We're down to about 5% unemployment. I think that could go even as low as maybe 4%. I think it's going to be better. There's also going to be tremendous stimulus in terms of public works projects. And I think the first is what President Obama talked about recently, and that is giving young people the opportunity, if they're willing to do a certain amount of public service, to attend the community colleges in their community free of charge. I think it's going to be tough. We're going to all have to pray and cross our fingers and get those poor little rabbit foot out. But I think enough people really want to help the youth of the United States, and it's got a good chance of going through. And if it does, that means that's very good for education. It's also good for the youth, and it's building industry. I think the Federal Reserve is going to keep zero interest rate until late May, and that'll be good for people to stimulate building projects and things of that nature. But it is going to, by the end of 2015, it will be back up to 1%. I also feel that there's still this feeling the Mideast has always been unsettled due to conflicts. I think that it's still going to be a dicey year over there. I don't see that peace between Israel and their neighbors. However, I think the biggest issue is going to be these terrorist attacks, which are just recently in France. It's January 10th now. But I see more going on in Paris, Berlin, and even in Rome. I think they're going to be more isolated incidents, but it's going to, of course, make us all kind of on edge. So that will be one of the negatives. I also feel that we are going to find for investors that the price of silver, which has been down quite a while, I would say it should start to go up by spring, possibly by May. You'll see it going back up, and also the price of gold with it. Not a lot, but going up, so that's good. We also find that the United States has got to be very careful in terms of being embroiled in foreign wars and foreign conflicts throughout 2015 and 16, and this is from the United States chart. As a country, we were born July 4th, 1776, at approximately 2:10 a.m. And right now, Neptune is making a difficult aspect to our chart, which indicates kind of times that America could make poor decisions. And it has to be very careful in terms of how it plays things out in overseas issues. Now, I do think that we're going to find that people are beginning to be more aware of our need to improve energy situations. So I do feel by spring, we have a wonderful aspect astrologically, where Jupiter, the planet of good luck, makes a wonderful aspect to Uranus, the planet of change. So this should bring more optimism, new government programs to create jobs and promote education, and also more money given to Homeland Security and also local police forces. And I think this is going to make people feel that the economy is going in the right direction, or things are getting a little more positive. I think you should see the stock market take note of these positive trends. Also, price of metals going up in April and May. And we will find things look pretty good until the new moon in about June 16th at 25 Gemini. And I think that's going to create stress because, of course, it's the end of the fiscal year. So we could have the usual difficulties between the two parties. I think with all the fire planets, we could have drought in California and Midwest. Jupiter will be in the sign of the king until August 11th. And I think that'll give some good direction. When Jupiter goes into the sign of Virgo, August 12, 2015, we're going to see more emphasis on clean water. There'll be a book out this fall, I feel, between August and December of 2015, similar to Rachel Carson's The Silent Spring, about pesticides, but I feel someone's going to write a bestseller on the GMOs, the genetically modified grains, and I think people are going to be much more aware of their health in the fall of the year, which is good. Also, astrologically, we have 7 super moons. Do you know what a super moon is?
A big moon?
A big moon, it's right, it is a big moon. Because the super full moons are super full, because the super moons are when the moon is the closest to the Earth. So we have 7, and the first is January 20th. And this particular super moon brings about more concern in Europe. Also, it makes aspects to the north of the United States. So the United States chart is a little dicey until approximately March 20th. So we have a lot of things that we need to make adjustments, aware security issues that will be going on. February 18th, the super moon at zero Pisces comes very close to the planet Neptune, and it could bring some confusion in the Mideast and oil issues come up. But by March 20th, the super moon at 29 Pisces brings the first beginning of spring, and with it some positive change and some direction for our country. And I felt this the best chance of the Republicans and Democrats working together will be March 20th till approximately August 29th. So spring and summer could bring some very positive things. The full moon, August 29th, is going to be a big moon. That's the harvest moon. And it's going to be a super harvest moon, so look up in the sky. And that will also bring out people more aware of what they desire, things they wish to reform. So those people that are into protesting will be doing more protesting. And we find September 27th, the super moon is at 4 Aries. I think this affects education programs. And the super moon, October 27th, just before the November election, is at 3 Taurus, and this could bring a little jitters in the stock market. So that's the astrological prediction. I feel psychically Pope Francis is going to do some wonderful new programs that will help his spiritual mission with the poor, the mentally ill, and he may even ruffle a few feathers because he's not afraid to really stand up for the rights of all citizens, including the disenfranchised. And so I think there'll be some great things coming from Pope Francis. The Dalai Lama, who I adore, the Tibetan Buddhist leader who lives in exile in Dharamsala, India, his chart's a little weak. He needs to take care of his health more. Of course, he's such a positive thinker, he'll never talk about himself, but he may be under medical care, so we'll say some prayers for him. I think that we have race riots in 2014. I think welfare programs are going to have to be curtailed a little bit, so there may be bread riots as well. In terms of by the time we get into the fall, who's going to be talking about who's going to be running in 2016 election? I feel that Mitt Romney is going to be tried to be persuaded to run. But if Mitt Romney doesn't run, you're going to hear a lot of talk about Jeb Bush. I looked at his horoscope. He's got a pretty positive chart for 2016. But he is a team player, and he'll see what Romney does first. And I feel Hillary Clinton, I feel, will definitely run. You may see some news about Hillary Clinton around mid-June. And I feel both Bill Clinton and Hillary want her to be in the White House. So you've got a real team effort there. Well, and I'm not really Democrat or Republican. I'm independent. I try to vote for the best person. But that's what I'm seeing at this time in terms of things going on. I do feel that we all are going to have to be, you know, a little more practical. But I think we'll have a little more money in our pockets in 2015. So a little more disposable income will be good for the entertainment industry. And of course, Jupiter rules expansion. And while it's in Leo through mid-August, that should be very good for the music, the arts, and entertainment industry as well. So that's my take, just generally on the year ahead. If you go to my website, www.theartofmediumship.com, I do have an astrology blog that I update on a regular basis and try to inspire people through understanding the different cycles. Okay. If you look at my website, I had a quote from one of my favorite persons posted for January, and that's from Paramahansa Yogananda. He says, divine love recognizes all good persons who enter our lives as expression of God's love for us. So I also try to put some positive thoughts to inspire us for each month, which I think is very important. The astrological blog for January says to be watch the news around January 15th, which is approximately the next week, when Pluto makes an exact square to the lunar nodes. And the lunar nodes in our astrological charts are the karmic axis. So there are some karmic conditions coming in very strong mid-January for us, and we need to be alert with it. And I do feel the new moon, which will be January 20th in Aquarius, is going to be very good for technology and give us a very strong sense of passion. Now, this particular aspect of the moon makes an aspect to the south node. And the last time this happened, I always like to do research because I'm a writer. We had a lot of debate over slavery. The last time this particular aspect happened was June 2nd, 1847. And there's great debate over slavery. And I do think you're going to find between January 20th and the next new moon, which will be February 18th, more concern about racial issues in the United States. Civil rights, immigration, morality issues will be in the news January 20th to February 18th. And it's going to promote people wanting to have a little more patience because Mercury will go retrograde January 21st. And when it's retrograde, have you heard about Mercury retrograde?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it slows us down. So I usually say Mercury retrograde makes everything go just a little slower. So have a bit of patience because everything takes just a little bit longer to accomplish when Mercury is retrograde. It's not a good time to buy a car, for example. You might get a lemon. It's better to wait till when Mercury goes direct. And for your big purchases, I would say wait until after Lincoln's birthday, after February 12th, when Mercury goes direct. And things should go a little bit better on the individual level. So those are the kinds of things I like to put in my astrology blog for people to look at and think about and be aware of the moon cycles and how they affect us on a monthly basis. You know, the new moon is when you should start things. And the full moon is when you get the reward. The Hindus say that if you want to do some very serious thinking, such as forgiveness or deep meditation, do it just during the old moon, a couple of days before the new moon, because that's when the moon's energy is very weak and it's a good time to do deep, deep meditation. A good time to really get into letting go of whatever needs to be let go of.
So then I should wait until a new moon before I have my birthday?
Oh, no. But if you have to start a project and you have a choice, you don't always have a choice. I like to start during a new moon. I do.
Now you know how my jokes fall on their face.
When it happens, because everybody on their birthday, that's a new start, a new solar start. Everybody's birthday is a start of new energy for them, so it should be a time of celebration.
Well, mine's the 22nd, so.
22nd of January?
Oh, yeah.
We have a lot of 22nds in this show.
At the beginning of Aquarius, your person for the new age.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, we had 3 Aquarian presidents, and they were all changed the United States significantly.
Our good way or a bad way?
Oh, I think significant change. I think good. I think our first Aquarian president was Abraham Lincoln, born February 12th. And he, of course, changed our way that we looked at civil rights, the rights of the African Americans, and he freed the slaves. And he also wrote the wonderful Emancipation Proclamation. And Abraham Lincoln was the first of the Aquarian presidents, and then the next Aquarian president was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And he started the New Deal. He started Social Security and did the Conservation Corps that gave jobs to many people. So I think he changed in a good way. And our last Aquarian president was Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan worked to decentralize government, to bring government back to the states. And I have to tell you, Henry, every single Aquarian president had an interest in the psychic. Did you know that?
No, I never realized that.
The Aquarians are very open-minded. And Abraham Lincoln actually had mediums come to the White House. He had a medium called Nettie Colbert Maynard, who did seances. And in the late 1800s, she wrote a book about this called With Abraham Lincoln, a Spiritualist.
Huh.
Abraham Lincoln's wife was the one who was more interested in mediumship because she lost her son, Willie, in the White House. And she was very interested in contacting him. And then Franklin Delano Roosevelt actually had Jean Dixon visit him in the White House. And she talks about that in her autobiography. And she had the unusual task of smuggling her crystal ball under her fur of snow into the White House office because she would do scrying. She would look at a crystal ball and see the answer. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt asked her how long he had to live, and she said, just a little time, and he died 6 months later. So Jean Dixon was very accurate. And then... And this was all documented in her moral biography. And then, of course, Ronald Reagan had the astrologer Joan Quigley do his chart and help with his appointment. And when Ronald Reagan was in office, I just knew he had an astrologer working with him because he would sign things at rather strange times like midnight or 10:02. You know, it was very, very different, you know, not the standard times. And Joan Quigley wrote a book where she talks about Ronald Reagan's wife, Mrs. Reagan, Nancy, calling her and having the president's horoscope delineated at a regular basis. And the reason Nancy Reagan was so petrified that something would happen to her husband in the White House is we have what's called the Saturn-Uranus conjunction, and every 20 years, a president has been assassinated or dies in the White House, going back to Abraham Lincoln. However, I do feel the reason that President Ronald Reagan was not assassinated, remember, there was an assassination attempt. You know, he came very close to dying. Right. People didn't know.
Yeah, he was shot.
Well, the dum-dum bullets that were given to him didn't quite work as well as they should have. He was supposed to have bullets that actually would have exploded on impact, and they didn't quite work as well as it was thought.
Right. I'm telling you, he came inches to dying. And the reason I think this he avoided an assassination was because of the timing of his event. Any time his chart was badly afflicted, Joan Quigley said, he's got to stay home today. So I think you can fight fire with fire. He fought the negative astrological elements by using a prudent schedule. So, you know, I'm not a fatalist by any means. I believe we have a mind and God's guidance to help us through all kinds of situations.
Well, Elaine, you know that Winston Churchill actually started a department, a defense department that ran Hitler's horoscopes so that they would sort of know when Hitler would be doing things, because Hitler had his own astrologers. that he knew these are the best time to do battles. So then they said, well, fine, we'll run his horoscope too. And they knew when Hitler would pretty much strike and stuff, so they were ready for him.
That's right. And in the United States, we employed an astrologer. Frank Mondone or Roosevelt had the astrologer Grant Louis work for him and work on Hitler's chart to tell what the next move would be as well. Hitler was very into the occult.
Oh, yeah.
In the worst possible way.
Cool movies about it.
Yeah, he was very into the occult. And he would, if you didn't like his astrologer or psychic, he would have him killed. So it wasn't good to work for him.
I believe
a very well-known psychic by the name of Hanussen. He would be like Houdini would be in the United States. And he was a stage performer. He was a clairvoyant and a mentalist. And he did predictions for the higher-ups of the Nazis. And he was very accurate. He said he predicted that Hitler would come into power when he was little-known. And he said he would stay in, I think it was 7 years, but then after that, there would be a downward turn. But anyway, the Nazis had him killed. They had Hanussen killed. He was going to work one day. They picked him up in one of their limousines, and he was never heard of again until his body was found in the German woods. But, you know, it just shows where your intentions are. I do believe that the occult can be used for good or bad.
Hey, Elaine, good. Actually, speaking about that, I have a question from the chat room.
I love it.
It's backtracking a little bit. It's about the different moon phases. And this is from Cy in our chat room. And he asks, what is your thought on blood moons for this year?
You mean the really full moon? I have to really see what he means by a blood moon. But I think the super moons are the ones I'm studying the most, because when the moon comes very, very close to the Earth, that's when you get the closest influence.
I don't know.
Does a blood moon look red?
That's sort of like around autumn. Yeah, that's more like autumn, almost harvesty moon type of blood moon, I think.
Yeah, the strongest moon would be in August, that full moon in August, that super moon.
Oh, it's a moon as it appears during a lunar eclipse?
Well, there's several lunar eclipses. If you tell me one that he wants me to look up, I'll be glad to. I have my ephemeris here.
Okay. Oh, an eclipse of the Earth over the moon is what he's talking about with the blood moons.
Yeah, well, the eclipses are very, they just intensify them, and you have to look and see if it's a north node, meaning a lucky eclipse, or a south node eclipse. It makes a difference. But the eclipse is definitely intense, and I've done a lot of studies on eclipses, and when you delineate eclipses, you've got to look and see where it is seen in the Earth, because wherever that eclipse is viewed, it will have its effect. The number of years times the moment of the eclipse. So it lasts 10 minutes, then for 10 years, that eclipse will affect that particular part of the world. It's called Monday night. It's a very specialized branch of astrology.
Oh. Well, now we're quickly down to our last half hour. So if anyone else would like to get a reading, you need to let us know. Chat either Ceiling Cat Paraview. Jeff, you're no longer in there. You've done.
My computer is having issues connecting me to the internet at the moment.
Or you can private chat me, and we will get you in to get a reading if you would like to get one. So, with that, since we are running down a little bit, we do have some other questions, and I know I had a couple in your one book. You said that you
which,
to the home
which book
Mark Twain
you got a choice of which book
I didn't write down which one. Yeah, I know. That was my fault. It wasn't the seance. It was the one of New England. The Ghosts of...
Connecticut?
Oh, yeah, Ghosts of Connecticut.
First metaphysical book I wrote.
Right, and you said that you went to the home of Mark Twain. Harriet Beecher Stowe.
I went there recently. I did a seance in the power of the Mark Twain home.
So what did you find there?
Well, I was doing a program on Seance 101, which is physical phenomena, and at the Mark Twain Theater. And afterwards, I did a private seance for 12 people in the parlor of the Mark Twain house. And I did readings, and we also did some table tipping. And when I do table tipping, I set up a code. And has anyone of you done table tipping before?
I have seen it done, yes.
Yeah. Well, you put your fingers lightly on the table, and after a while, if you've got a physical medium present, which I am, the table will start to rock back and forth, and that's when you know you're making a connection, okay? So then you have to establish a code, and I usually ask spirits, show me a yes, and they made the spirit, in this case, it tilted toward me. And then I said, show me a no. In that case, the table remained stable. So once I started, I had a code going, I asked questions of the spirit in the room. And we found out that present that particular night was Susie Clemens, who was Mark Twain's daughter. She came in very, very strong because she actually died at 21 in the Mark Twain house on Forest Street in Hartford. And I frequently feel her around when I'm in that building. Mrs. Clemens came through. And Jean Clemens, who was Mark Twain's daughter, who died of epilepsy, not in the Mark Twain house, but in another home. And they came through, and they made their presence felt. Alas, Mark Twain did not come through. I don't think he was a big believer in the spirits. So, but the three ladies did, and we had a lot of fun. There's so much history in the Mark Twain house. For those of you who live in New England, it's really worth a trip. But anyway, when I did Connecticut Ghost, that was about 10 years ago, I went to the Mark Twain house and investigated. I went to the Theodore Pope house in Farmington. Theodore Pope was the first woman architect in Connecticut, and she was a very wealthy lady that often funded parapsychology research. She gave money to Harvard University and funded William James's research. And she wanted to establish a parapsychology society in the United States. So she and her maid took a trip to England just with the intent of going to the British Parapsychology Foundation and gain information. Unfortunately, the trip was disrupted because the ship she took was the Lusitania. And while maid were aboard, it was actually torpedoed by Germans. And Dick Pope and her maid were floating around in the Atlantic. And she was rescued, but after several hours in the cold Atlantic Ocean, she was the very last person to be rescued from the Lusitania. And I always like to feel that her spirit guide said to the rescuers, don't stop until you find Theodate, because they didn't stop until they got her. After that ghastly experience, Mrs. Pope was in no shape to start any society, so we never got our parapsychology society in Hartford. But her home is beautiful. She has a beautiful home with Monets, Picassos, beautiful architecture in Farmington, Connecticut. And when I started Connecticut Ghost, of course, I started calling the curators in these great homes to see if I could come in and do some investigation. And I left a voice message for Melanie Bourdeau, who was the curator. And a couple of days later, I was sitting on my sun porch. It was a beautiful August day. And this little lady, she's about 2 inches shorter than I am, spirit of this little lady came up behind me, and she said in this very genteel voice, your wish will be granted. And a minute later, the phone rang, and it was Melanie saying I could visit the Mark Twain house on Monday when the was closed to visitors. Well, I do feel that Theodate Pope played a role in the book Connecticut Ghost, and she seemed to be the type of spirit that was very inviting, very interested in helping people gain knowledge. There's a photograph of Theodate Pope just outside her second floor bedroom at Hillstead, which is her home. And I tried to take a photo of it, but every time I tried, I'd get this mist or ectoplasm over it. And I think she was standing right by the in front of the picture, so I never got her picture. But very interesting. I used that one. One of the ways I did research is I used an EMF meter. Have you ever used an EMF meter, electromagnetic meter?
Right.
It's great. It really kind of saves your time because I only had a couple of hours in my house to go through it. So I had my electromagnetic meter with me. And what it does is it detects electromagnetic rays. And the theory is where there's electromagnetic activity is likely to be psychic activity. Of course, it can also be electrical outlets, so you have to be careful. It's really psychic. But I went through, and I noticed that it was reading about 1 or 2 on a scale of 10. Not much. So I went into her office, and it started to go up to like 5 or 6. And I thought, wow, this is good. Something's going on here. So you have to kind of play hot and cold. You move around, and as it gets more electromagnetic activity, you stay there, and then you went about, and you go to the right or left and see where the highest activity was. Well, the highest electromagnetic activity, up to 9 or 10 on the meter, was right by this picture and by her desk. And I thought, I wonder what this is. Is this her father or one of her adopted sons? And I asked the curator, and she says, oh, that's Henry James, the author. Being an English major, I knew who Henry James was, and I thought, oh, was he related to William James, the parapsychologist? And she goes, yes, they were brothers. So then I said, well, did they ever visit Hillstead? And she said, they were frequently guests. And that's how I found out that she did a little more research on my own, and I found out that she gave quite a bit of money to Harvard University to help with the William James parapsychology study back at the turn of the century. So anyway, I did feel that her presence was there, and I felt a lot of good energy in the museum, which I enjoyed. I went to all of the places throughout Connecticut. One of the most interesting spots, toward the end of the book, I was trying to find something different besides historic houses and historic landmines. So I thought, well, I'll visit a cemetery. And I had read that Lorraine Warren, the wonderful clairvoyant, said there was a lot of psychic activity in some of the cemeteries in Connecticut. Have you heard of Lorraine Warren?
Yes.
Yes. I've met her once.
I got to meet her. I said hi.
She's known for her Amityville horror story and her research on the devil in Connecticut. I believe it's one of her books. Anyway, when I was doing my research, I came across a couple of articles regarding cemeteries that Lorraine Warren had visited, investigated, and two came to mind. One was Our Lady of the Rosary in Monroe, and the other was Union Cemetery in Eastern Connecticut. And they're known to have the ghost known as the Lady in White. So I said, this will be a good place to investigate and see what's going on. So on a very foggy January afternoon, my editor, Susan Roberts, and her nephew, Richard Dope, and I got our cameras, our boots, because it was pretty muddy out, our heavy winter jackets, and we went tramping through Union Cemetery. Well, the first thing I noticed when I entered, since I'm clairvoyant, I saw a lot of spirit lights on the edge of the cemetery, and I saw clairvoyantly American Indians. I thought there were a lot of American Indians on that particular property. And then we started clicking away, and all three of us got photographs of orbs and spirit shapes, which I share in my book, Connecticut Ghosts, and also Seance 101 has some psychic photography. The funny thing is, we didn't see them immediately, but when we developed the photos, they were there. And then we went over to Our Lady of the Rosary in nearby Monroe. Same thing. We took like 20, 30 pictures, each of us, and we all got orbs and spirit shapes, you know, like that one. Well, that was very productive. I don't really believe that spirits hang around cemeteries, but I think they're like a concentration point of psychic energy. So I did do that. And Connecticut Ghost, I also very much enjoyed learning more about some of the legends in Connecticut. There's all kinds of wonderful legends of things that went out. We don't realize it, but at one point, the citizens of Connecticut, when we were still a colony, were very much anti-psychic. In fact, the very first woman that was put to death for witchcraft was in Connecticut. Her name was Alice Young, and she came from Windsor, Connecticut. But it's interesting, about 100 years later, we had some great spiritualists in Connecticut, Isabella Beecher Hooker, and also Harriet Beecher Stowe, and her husband, Captain Calvin Stowe, were all ardent spiritualists. They were very much involved in having seances, writing articles for the Spiritualist magazine. And Isabella Beecher Hooker's husband was a direct descendant of Thomas Hooker, one of those people that were totally against anything to do with parapsychology. But John Hooker was actually a wonderful spiritualist, and he wrote many articles and promoted women's rights. So I learned a lot about the history of Connecticut as I was doing the book, Connecticut Ghost.
Now, did you guys have something? I want to, Barbara. You've been awful quiet tonight. For some reason.
I'm listening.
Yeah, well, you have.
I love listening to Elaine.
You had some questions before. You were talking about some of the astrological things that you wanted to ask.
Well, we were discussing this last week, and Mars, Pluto's aspects to the nodes. There's some heavy hitters in the outer planets, and when you start talking about outer planets in aspect to each other, it tends to be more global of an effect than some of the Mercury retrograde does affect everybody, but to a different degree than anybody else does. But these outer planets are starting to make some very interesting connections with each other.
Very strong.
And yeah.
Strong. I was saying before the show, Pluto has been squaring Uranus. Pluto is a planet of dynamic change, and Uranus is also a planet of revolution. And they have been at it since 2008, and they're going to finish up this square in 2015. And seven times they've made exact squares to each other. So this has kept us in a very state of flux. And really, in the United States chart, we have a Pluto return, which means in our progress chart and in our transiting chart, the planet Pluto is exactly opposite the United States Sun, which is your power. So we're going through a tremendous changes of power. And the only way that a country gets through these tremendous changes that we've been through, especially since 2008, is by being flexible, by being willing to try some new things, by using our technology and our sense of adventure. And also, I do feel it means we're going to have to go back to the values upon which the United States was founded as a place for life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. I think this is going to be very important. We're going into some very conservative periods and some of our old-fashioned values as we go through this Pluto opposition. So that's been going on. Mm-hmm. And also, I think what's been very interesting is we're going to be given some gifts. And I think the gifts are coming in the form of new technology, new inventions in medicine, and more humanitarian programs in the spring of the year. I wish I could say I feel the immigration problem is going to be solved, but maybe we can get some common sense going into it, which I hope will happen. I think there's going to be a wonderful spirit of generosity in the spring and early summer. If people really wanting to show the Jupiter in Leo, the generosity of our nation toward all people. So that will be good. Neptune has been in the sign of Pisces. And the last time, Neptune was the planet of mysticism, medicine, art, and creativity, was in the sign of Pisces, was in the 1860s. And it was a time of great change in our country. We had wonderful advances in medicine. They began to use ether in surgery, so we had painless surgery. We also had the civil rights issue in terms of the Civil War at that time. And we had an incredible philosophies going on during the period in the 1800s when Neptune was in the sign of Pisces. We had the birth of new thought. We had the beginning of spiritualism in 1848, but it became very popular during the 1850s and 60s. And we also had the birth of theosophy with Madame Blavatsky. So I do think the Neptune in Pisces there is going to bring about tremendous philosophical ideas, where people are going to be talking more in terms of maybe perhaps a universal religion or more compassion for our fellow man, more awareness of our need to help all our citizens. So I think that will be good. But I also think that it's bringing up a lot of issues about being fair to people around us. So that's going to be very interesting. And these larger planets, Pluto, Neptune, and Uranus, take many years to go through signs. The moon changes sign every 2.5 days. The sun changes sign about every 30 days. But Pluto takes 20 or 30 years to go through a sign. Neptune about 15. You know, and as they're doing this, you know what's happening? It's slow change. So it is true, Barbara. We do see these major changes are because of the outer planets, Pluto, Neptune, and Uranus.
I have a
and aspect, yeah, and aspects to them. Yeah. Sorry.
And you know,
I was just going to ask if we were going to talk about those dueling zodiac signs like Aries and Libra, as you mentioned before the show. Because I looked at the time, I'm like, we haven't even talked about that.
I feel that astrology is a philosophy as well as a science. Mm-hmm. And Marsha Moore gave this lecture years ago. She wrote Astrology the Divine Science. And she said you can learn so much from your opposite sign. Like Aries, people born approximately March 20th to April 20th, their key word is I am. They like to go, go, go. Their opposite side, Libra, which is approximately September 20th to October 20th, their key word is I balance. And they like to take their time and finish things and can be very artistic and relationship oriented. So Aries need to be a little more balanced and relationship-oriented, and Libras need to get going and accomplish things, so you learn from each other. Taurus, which is approximately April 20th to May 20th, the key word is I have. And they're nuts and bolts, practical people. The opposite sign, Scorpio, they're always in the desire nature. They're ambitious. They're not happy with what they have. They're ready for something more. And their key word is I desire. So Taurus sometimes need to get out of their comfort zone, and Scorpios need to calm down a little bit and kind of not be quite so intense. Gemini, approximately June 20th, the key word is I think. They're very intellectual. They're rational people. The opposite sign, Sagittarius, approximately November 20th to December 20th, their key word is I perceive or I understand. They're very philosophical. They look at the big picture. Gemini looks at the fine print. And the Gemini people who are very rational need to have the philosophical outlook of the Sagittarius. And the Sagittarius, they're always looking at the stars and the great ideas, sometimes have to be a little more rational and look at the fine print. And then we have Cancer, which is the home, which is June 20th to approximately July 20th, and their home and family. They're that little nesting instinct that we all have. Capricorn is the career or the outer world, and that is approximately December 20th to January 20th. So the key word for Cancer is I feel, the nesting instinct of the mother. The key word for Capricorn, the opposite side, is I utilize, and that is like the father or the career. But you know, Cancers really need to be out in the world a little bit, and Capricorns need to stay home more and bet to balance. And then we have the Leos, which are July 20th to August 20th. Leo is the king. The key word is I will. The opposite side is Aquarius. And the Aquarius keyword is I know, the scientific knowledge. And Marsha used to describe Leo as the big frog in the little pond, getting lots of attention. And the Aquarius, which I believe Henry is like the fish, the little fish in the ocean, the scientist that works with everybody very humbly. The Leos need to be more humble, and Aquarius need to be willing to be front and center more. And the last of the comparisons are Virgo, August 20th to September 20th. Their key word is I analyze, they're the thinkers. And the opposite sign is Pisces, which would be February 20th to approximately March 20th. And their key word is I believe. And Virgos are very analytical, they're nitpicky. They are detail-oriented, and they're hard workers, but they don't take time to relax, as the Pisces do. The Pisces love to relax, they love water, they have a sense of faith and belief, but sometimes they don't work as hard as the Virgos do. The Virgos need to relax, and Pisces sometimes need to attend to the details and work just a little harder. So the Zodiac, really, if you look at your opposite sign, you can learn to balance. I think life really is about being balanced. I know it's, today we're also career-oriented. Sometimes we forget about home and family. So balance is very important.
Very good. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was a very quick rundown of everything, but I'm glad we got to touch upon it.
Okay. We are down to just a few minutes. Anything, a quick question that you guys have for Elaine before we start trying to wrap everything up? Nothing?
Oh, man. No.
Okay.
I guess we forgot this year to have her read us, but we don't have time now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or what's on tap for Paranormal View.
Oh, that's true.
Just give me your month and your day of birth.
Jeff?
Oh, April 29th.
So you're Taurus. So I think you should be doing more writing. Are you working on a project now?
I actually just had one of my comedy scripts read at a workshop and got much more more well received than I expected.
Good, because I feel more writing. I feel screenwriting for you as well. And I feel that you have a natural sense of comedy, do you?
I think so.
I
wouldn't know I listen to any of my podcasts, but you know.
No, I see you expanding on the variety. I think that's very good. And Barbara, just your month and your day?
July 16th.
Oh, yes. I think you tell you're a Leo, right?
I'm a Cancer.
Cancer, okay. Sorry, I'm wrong on that. Cancer. Let me just focus. Cancer. I feel that you are very intuitive, but you don't like people to know that about you. And I see you have that you are have a very strong sense of color. And to me, I feel one of the things you should be doing more is a little bit more photography or art. Are you interested in that direction?
Yeah, I do photography.
I didn't know that, but I spirit telling me you should do more photography and watch and see if you don't get some orbs we were talking about.
I've never got
You know how everyone loves orbs on the show.
I do a lot of cemetery photography. I don't get orb shots.
It's outdoors. Before you said cemetery, it's outdoors.
Yeah.
Well, Google psychicphotography.org, and you'll see tons of orb pictures. I think you're going to get some. It'll be good.
Okay.
And Henry, what's your month and day of birth?
January 22nd.
Oh, yes. Happy birthday. Aquarian people, and you're an Aquarius, are very open-minded, and they make great friends. And I do feel a friend you haven't heard from in a long time is going to get in contact. You were in the military at one time?
Yes.
Yeah, so in the military. I felt very good with that. I have the name of somebody in the spirit world with a name beginning with a D. Would it be a Doug or a David?
Trying to remember if there's one with a D.
Dave.
Yeah.
Dave.
No, Dave's not passed.
Okay. Well, I have somebody in spirit. It's a gentleman. I felt his name begins with a D. I thought it could be like a Doug, Dan, David. He's just giving me the initial. I felt good with him. And I feel somebody in the spirit world, an older man, talking about a watch. Do you have your grandfather's watch?
No, I do not.
Pocket watch?
No. Seems like my brother might have one.
Okay, because I felt this gentleman left a pocket watch. He's a relative. And I felt he was very proud of this watch. And I felt whoever has it, I want them to take very good care of it. I also have a lady here that did a lot of pickling, canning, that type of thing.
Yeah, my mom used to.
She was good at it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like pickled cucumbers. It's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Out of that, and she did it partly for economy, but also because she liked good eating, and she's around you. And did she have a little bit of trouble with her eyes before she died?
Yeah, she might have had a little trouble with her eyes. It was more breathing, though.
Reading, stuff like that. She didn't like that one bit.
Right.
But she comes in and she says, don't worry so much about your health. That's what she says. She says you've got a lot of good days ahead.
Oh, okay. That's great.
Yeah. I have a Jim here. Do you know who that would be?
No.
Well, write the D down, the David or Doug, and also write James or Jim, because I feel them in your past. And people come to me all the time when I do readings for them. Oh, I went home. I remembered who that was.
Oh.
So next time I'm on your show, you can tell me if they came through. That's okay. So good. I also love being on the show. You all have a great attitude toward the paranormal.
Well, yes. we're going to have to jump off. I want you to stay on, Elaine, till after work.
Yeah.
But we got to run real quick.
Henry, I'm not going to give out all my stuff. All I'm going to say is if you listen to any of our previous podcasts, all the links are at the end and also on the report pages. Look us up on Facebook. Follow us there, and you'll get the information.
And we're on iTunes.
Yes. So next week, we have Gypsy Moon on. She is a psychic spirit medium, and we will be talking with her. So until then, this is Henry Foister,
Jeffrey Gould,
Barbara Duncan,
and Kat Kloko.
And we will see you next week at the same time. Good night, everybody.
The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View. Come back and listen to us again, if you dare. The Paranormal View from the Power X Radio Network. The Paranormal View.